Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us to the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. All right, some of you already know what this is. In fact, if you've looked at the title of the show, you probably know what this is. This is going to be part two of our 2020-2021 season review. Of course, I'm joined by the marvelous Dave Hendrick, who you can find on Twitter at TwoFootedPod. It's also the name of his show. If you're Googling it or looking for it on the podcasting apps, I think it shows up under EPL Index Podcast. So either of those things, be sure to check him out. He's fantastic. As we mentioned at the start of part one, we've done these for the last 4 years, maybe, of doing transfer recap, season recap. So we're going through every club. On the first episode, we went from Arsenal through Leicester. Today, we're going to be going all the way from Liverpool to Wolves. Some big clubs in here, so we'll try to hit the gas pedal a little bit. Otherwise, we'll all be here feature-length amounts of time. But anyway, Dave, I figure we'll start off with you. Obviously, not the season Liverpool were hoping for coming into it. Lots of devastating injuries, maybe a little bit of a title hangover, but you still managed to get top four regardless.
Yeah, I mean, you can break our season into three parts. So if you look at the season up until Christmas, where we beat Crystal Palace 7-0, that's 14 games in, and we were top of the league. We were the best team in the country through the first 14 games. Our only defeat was to Aston Villa, that bizarre 7-2. But we were top. We'd lost Van Dijk. We'd lost Gomez. We'd lost Thiago for a sizable portion of the season. And then it all came tumbling down around our ears. And between Christmas and the next game was a 1-1 draw at home to West Brom. And a 1-0 defeat at home to Fulham on the 7th of March. That's a 14-game stretch in which Liverpool were absolutely appalling. 8 defeats, 3 wins, 3 draws. Relegation form for 14 games, having topped the table for 14 games. But then the last 10 games, again, we were the best team in the country, the best record over the last 10 games. 8 wins, 2 draws. And managed to not just get top four when at one point we looked dead and buried. We were 8th after 28 games. We went 6th, then 7th, then 6th. Then it looked like we blew it when we drew away with Leeds and at home with Newcastle, having had those games in hand going into added time. But 5 wins on the bounce, plus Leicester falling apart, Chelsea having slip-ups. We end up in 3rd, and I have no idea how. I would say for the first 14 games, I think it's an A because we were top of the table. For the last 10, it's an A. But that middle 14, that is an F minus of a run. So overall, I think it's a B. I think it's not what we hoped for. We'd obviously hope to retain the title. And I think if we'd had a full strength team, I think we'd have won the title at a canter. But it is what it is. 3rd will do. We'll have to reload. We get Van Dijk back for next season. We already have Ibrahima Konate coming in. I think we saw in that last 10 game runs exactly what Thiago Alcantara is going to be for this team. And, you know, I think we'll be good to go again next season. But yeah, I think a B overall is where I'd fall on this season.
Yeah, and what's all the hate against Thiago about?
Part of it is there are some portions of the Liverpool fan base who don't like the idea that he might replace Jordan Henderson in the team. Part of it is that he's not the typical type of midfielder we see in the Premier League, in that he doesn't get a whole lot of goals or assists, but that's not what he does. He's a controller. He's an instigator. He's the one that gets your team playing. He's the conduit for everything to go through. And we saw him take, like, him and Henderson only played in midfield together, I think, once in a three with Fabinho. That was against Everton. It's the only game Thiago and Fabinho played in midfield together that Liverpool didn't win. He didn't seem to... Him and Henderson was an awkward fit because both of them want the ball a lot. And obviously, Thiago's better on the ball than Henderson. Henderson does a lot of screaming. Thiago didn't seem to take to that all that well. It wasn't really a surprise that when Henderson got hurt, Thiago improved massively. And indeed, Liverpool's form improved massively. Now, it's not just about Henderson. It was about how everything else slotted in. But Henderson at centre-back was a major issue through that bad run. And when he got hurt against Everton and Liverpool just had to play centre-backs because they had nobody else, the team sort of settled and found its groove. So next season, that's going to be an issue Klopp will have to sort out. I think he's going to have to figure out what to do with Henderson moving forward, because at 31, another injury-plagued season, that's now four out of the last five where he's missed substantial amounts of time. He hasn't played over, I think, 2,100 minutes in a league season in... I think he's only done it once since 14-15. Yeah, I think I'm right in saying that. He's only played over 2,100 minutes once since 14-15. So I think next season what we'll see is Henderson will sort of slide into the role that's been James Milner's, where he'll be used in certain situations in certain games, but won't be an every game starter, because they're going to have to manage him. Like, the lad has had, he had six injuries in a 12-month period, and he got hurt in February. Initially, the diagnosis was he'll be back after the international break at the start of April. And by the end of the season, he still wasn't fit, and he's still not fit now. And we're almost 4 months past that injury. He's gone to the Euros. If he plays, I'd be surprised. I'd also be even more surprised if he played and managed not to get injured. So, you know, I think it's just one of those things that Klopp's going to have to manage very carefully next season. He's obviously the club captain, so he's going to play in quite a few games. But I think it will be more that sort of Milner situation where he might have 25, 30 appearances, but maybe only has like 14, 1500 minutes, because you don't get less injury prone as you get older.
Right. I'm not even a professional athlete, and that's accurate. I also thought it was interesting that a lot of people were talking about like Trent's regression and whether or not I should make it up to the Euro squad. Obviously, he's had to withdraw with a leg injury, which is a shame. But he, I think, led the league in accurate crosses. So, yeah, he had 67, and then Robertson was tied for second with 60. So, maybe it was the defensive performances, but I was just curious as to your thoughts on his performances here.
He got COVID in preseason. And I think he got long COVID off the back of it. And there's no doubt it's the worst season Trent has had in terms of game-to-game performance. But from about mid-February on, he was really, really good. He also had a hamstring injury in the first part of the season as well that didn't help. But I do just think it was the effects of COVID, personally. Because the Trent we saw at the end of the season was very much the Trent we've gotten used to. And now... he gets the summer off. I know it's not ideal that he's going to be rehabbing an injury. But I was actually hoping he'd get left out of the squad, because I wanted
just
to see
rest
him go
up
on a and go on a revenge tour next year and be like, right, you think Reece James is better than me and Kyle Walker and Kieran Trippier? Allow me to show you what a great right back looks like. And he is the best right back England have. He's the best right back in the league. He should have been... Like, if everybody's being honest, there are two players that England have that can claim to be better footballers at this point than Trent. Harry Kane and Raheem Sterling. And that's it. And even Sterling
had
is debatable, because he had a stinker of a season. Kane had an incredible season. And we'll get to him when we get to Spurs, because he's been robbed of a couple of awards that he deserved.
It's true.
But other than those two, when the team sheet is handed to Southgate, it should come with those three names printed on it, and then he can pick the rest. To even debate that the others are on Trent's level was foolish.
Yeah, obviously Reece James, you know, success-wise this year, got a lot of plaudits and made a step forward. But yeah, raw talent-wise.
Pull down the first choice spot at Chelsea for most of the season. Like, Aspilicueta played a bunch at wing back. Callum Hudson-Odoi played a bunch at wing back under Tuchel. It's the same thing on the left. Like, Ben Chilwell had a great season, but he wasn't first choice all year because Marcus Alonso played a ton. So I think people have different expectations. Like, I heard the argument been made, oh, well, like, Kyle Walker won the league and Kieran Trippier won the La Liga and Reece James won the Champions League. Yeah, Trent's won the Premier League and Champions League.
Yeah, so, and is younger.
It's not like a thing that this is some scrub.
Yeah.
Or some lad who's just had his first season. He's a very experienced player at this point and has won everything there is to win in the game domestically.
Yeah. All right, one last Liverpool question for you. Biggest need this summer?
Honestly, I think the biggest need is a wide player because I think they need to either consider moving to 4-2-3-1 or 4-4-2 and put Salah through the middle. Or if they're going to stick with 4-3-3, I think either Salah or Mane needs to go through the middle and Firmino needs to be dropped out of the team. I think ideally you'd want to have Salah, Mane plus one as the starters, Firmino and Jota as the depth. That to me is an elite front five. Mane obviously had a very poor season. First bad season he's had for Liverpool. But again, he got COVID in October. And was never the same afterwards. So, you know, his underlying numbers are all quite similar to what they had been before. It was just the actual production wasn't there. And at times he just looked a little bit disinterested. But I think get a high-end wide player in. Or, look, if you could go and get a great number nine, I'd be all for it. But I don't think they will. And I'd rather play Salah through the middle and bring in a Rafinha, a Sancho, that type of player.
Then have to spend whatever it costs to get a good enough striker up front. That's exactly what we did when we signed Bergwijn. Is Kane went down and we looked at the cost of strikers and we were like, why don't we just buy Bergwijn and play Son up front?
That's the thing.
Yeah, yeah, just price-wise, that tends to make more sense. I ended up, I think, giving you a C. Where did you land?
A B. I think we had two portions of the season that I think were an A, one that was an F-, but to get third with everything that went on, I think it's a B. And I think for Klopp, It's a huge achievement to have gotten third with, you know, let's remember, Nat Phillips couldn't give him away to championship clubs a year ago.
Starting regularly, yeah.
Starting regularly. And Reece Williams next to him, who was playing in the conference last season. Like,
yeah. I think that's the difference in our grades.
I don't think people fully grasped how bad those two
really were.
How bad the situation was that those two were starting regularly.
I think the difference in our grades is I'm thinking preseason expectation.
Of course.
With a little bit of injury. And you're saying with the injuries, it's incredible that you achieved what you did, which is absolutely fair. Moving to Manchester City next. They, you know, won the Premier League again, as per, for the most part. Their transfers were terrific. Ruben Dias, Ferran Torres, incredible players. Ruben Dias is not Virgil van Dijk. I'm not going to go on a rant about that. You can if you want. Nathan Ake signing was a bit weird considering then they went out and signed Ruben Dias because now they spent all that money on a fourth center back. But, you know, whatever. Obviously, the big loss is David Silva, Leroy Sané, and Otamendi if it was 2016. But he obviously wasn't playing that big a part. And I think he was out on loan at some point. But anyway, this is the fewest points for a title-winning side since 2015-16, which is when Leicester did it. But they obviously won't be complaining too much, except for the fact that, you know, they miss out on the Champions League again, which is why I've given them an A-. Seems like you've divided it very nicely between Premier League and everything else, and I have not done as good a job of that. So obviously falling short of there is going to be a big disappointment for them. The signing of Dias was a terrific one. Stones developed really well next to him, which was very important. Very uncomfortable for Aymeric Laporte, who a couple of years ago, when he first joined, was it January 2 years ago? And we were all talking about how, you know, he was probably the second most talented center back in the league. And now he's the third choice on his own team. Obviously, they ended up rotating back and forth between Stones and Laporte there down the stretch. But yeah, it's just very strange given his talent and past performances. And yeah, some of the rumors about him wanting to leave, especially after what happened with the French national team and how he's Spanish, all that stuff. Not an easy time in the life of Aymeric Laporte. Cancelo found a way to finally be useful, rotating between right and left back, depending on who was fit or who was playing each match. And like I said, David Silva. David Silva is one of the most skillful footballers I've ever seen with my own eyes. And Phil Foden kind of replaced him pretty well. So I will never say that Phil Foden is the next David Silva. There are City people that years ago were saying that Phil Foden would end up being better than David Silva, which I considered heresy of the highest order. But Phil Foden came in, 14 goal contributions. Silva had 16 last year. Mostly playing in similar spaces. Just the talent on that kid is unbelievable. You were talking about, you know, who can claim a spot more strongly than Trent being Kane and Sterling. In a year or two, Foden's going to be on that list of the four or five names in pen. And then you Southgate Sancho, or whoever next is a pencil.
Him, Sancho, I think Declan Rice, Bellingham. Like, that England team is going to pick itself in a couple of years. Like,
yeah.
You'd be hard-pressed not to look at Bellingham, Rice, Mount and go, that is the midfield.
Mm.
And then say Foden, Kane, Sancho as
the attack.
I play
Foden out wide.
Yeah, Foden on the maybe on the right, cutting in, Sancho on the left, Kane through the middle with Rashford, Greenwood and Sterling as depth, or Rashford, yeah. Greenwood and Saka. Like, England's attacking options are going to be insane.
Yep.
For
sure.
This is not going to be breaking news when people listen to this, but it's breaking news for me and you now. David Ornstein has just tweeted, Aston Villa close to completing signing of Emi Buendia from Norwich will be a club record sale for Norwich in £30 million plus add-ons and a sell-on clause. Personal terms agreed, medical done. The Getafe sell-on was bought out a while ago. So it looks like Arsenal have missed out on Emi Buendia, who seemed to be their top target for the summer. But a great signing for Villa, and now we wait and see. Because the assumption will now be that that's Grealish gone.
Mm.
We'll wait and see. I don't think it means Grealish gone.
Yeah, me either. I think he'd either be able to play on the opposite side, and depending on what you want, you could either do Bertrand Traore or him. And then whenever Grealish does get injured, because you said the big thing is if we get to see Grealish play a whole season, is now you have a player that's comfortable playing out wide and being creative at the same time, which is exactly what they missed the second Grealish
I wonder if they might go to 4-2-3-1 with Luis and McGinn as a two, Watkins as a kind of on the right but narrow, because Matty Cash will bomb on outside him. Buendia on the left, Grealish is a 10, and maybe they go back in for Tammy Abraham, who they tried to sign last summer.
Yeah.
If they got him, they're going to be a problem if they get a recognized number 9. Watkins had a good season, but he's not going to get you 25 Premier League goals. I think Tammy Abraham in that team could get you 25 league goals.
I'll be honest. If I have Watkins and I know how much it costs to get Tammy Abraham, I have no reason to think that Watkins couldn't get there.
It's possible.
I don't know. I'm not saying that you're not right. I'm just saying I'm not sure it's worth the money.
It's possible, but if Watkins is your lone source of goals in the team and those goals dry up because Buendia is not a big Premier League goal scorer, Grealish is not a big Premier League goal scorer. Sure. Then you've got to go and find goals in that wide role. Now, maybe they do that. Maybe they bring in a goal-scoring wide player rather than a number 9 and leave Watkins through the middle. And that could work as well. Villa could be a problem next season. If they get a couple more of that kind of level, especially a centre-back, they'll be problematic.
Yeah, for sure. Just breaking news for you there. But finishing up City, I think obviously very positive step forward from Foden. The big question is now that you're losing Sergio Aguero, Gabriel Jesus has had many years to prove that he's the heir apparent, and I don't think he is. But Aguero, again, just an incredible Premier League footballer, ended up as the highest single-scoring player for a club, a record he took from Rooney with a brace in his final PL match that he came on in his final Premier League match that he came on as a sub and still scored two.
Funnily against Everton as well, the club that Rooney started and finished his Premier League.
That's funny. And I will say their defense was not particularly uninviting of Aguero snatching that record. But obviously a very, very good season for Manchester City, especially considering everything that was going on that led to struggles at a lot of the other big clubs. But that Champions League final is going to bite. They're closer now, I guess. They need a striker, so you know maybe that Champions League final loss is why they're going to stump up £150 million or whatever it winds up costing Kane. Obviously that big disappointment, but still won a couple of other trophies. Still has to be considered an A season for them. I went A minus because of the Champions League, but if we're divorcing the two, then I'm sure it's an A from you as well.
Yeah, it's an A from me. I think if you factor in the Champions League, and I think they do. I think that's a big part of why the whole project exists. And yeah, I think it's either an A minus or maybe even a B plus if you've been really critical of them. But you know they won the league. They managed the season better than everybody else because they've got the strongest squad, because they've spent so much money. Like you mentioned, they've got four really good centre backs there, like four centre backs who all cost over £40 million. They have three fullbacks who cost over £50 million. They should be able to manage it better than everybody else. I thought Gundogan was sensational for them this season. For me, he was the only real contender to Harry Kane for player of the season. He was, for me, City's best player. De Bruyne was great. Diaz had a very good first season. The debate is not worth having. Look at it this way. If you put Virgil van Dijk in that City team, they get a lot better. If you put Diaz in the Liverpool team instead of van Dijk, they get worse because he can't play in the Liverpool system. He'd get annihilated playing in that high line. So he's a good centre-back. He may become a very good centre-back, but the overhyping of him is frustrating. Foden had a great year. Mahrez, I thought, had a very good year. Bernardo Silva had a good year. Sterling, very disappointing. The injuries to Jesus and Aguero, disappointing. But I actually thought when they went on that great run, after having a disappointing start, they went on that great run and they were playing without a striker.
Yeah.
And they were playing like positionless football with Walker joining the two centre-backs as a back three, Cancelo stepping into midfield next to Rodri to form a platform and a defensive shield in front of that back three. And then the other five, Gundogan, De Bruyne, and then normally Sterling, Mahrez, and Foden as a front five, and all of them rotating position. They were just sensational. If he'd done that in the Champions League final, they'd be the champions of Europe. Instead, he left Rodri out and got a little bit too snazzy with himself. But a good season, but a season that they've had before.
Yeah,
they were aiming for more. At one point, they looked like they were on for a quadruple. Chelsea took both the FA Cup and the Champions League away from them. So I would give them an A based on the Premier League season. Right, Manchester United next. Second in the table. I would suggest a weak second place in that 74 points. There are seasons in which you would not have even gotten top four with 74 points. 14 points off City, never really challenged for the title.
There was like
never
one week where it was like 9 or 7.
9, and I think they had a game in hand.
Yeah.
And that was about it. A very weak end to the season. Defeats at home to Leicester when they rested everybody because they had to play Liverpool, and then they lost to Liverpool as well. Then they drew 1-1 with Fulham and were very, very fortunate because the goal they got was offside. And then they beat Wolves, obviously, on the last day to finish out the season. But look, second place, it is progress. They lost the European final just like City. I would give them a B on the Premier League season. But I think when you factor in they lost the Europa League to Unai Emery, maybe a B minus. They didn't really have many injuries to overcome this season. They had a pretty, you know, other than I think Pogba and Martial are the only regular starters that missed more than like 6-7 games. I think they had a fairly good run at things. And as I said in part one about Leicester, you look at next season with Chelsea reloading and a real manager, Liverpool will have everybody back and some new players. They're not getting second next season. Like, they might have finished above Liverpool this season, but in a season when Liverpool were dreadful and it's the best season United have had allegedly since Ferguson left, despite the fact they
could argue since Jose, same spot.
See, that's the thing. Mourinho finished second and with more points, and yet United fans are claiming, well, not all of them, obviously, but there are a chunk of United fans claiming this is the best season that they've had. Well, they finished 5 points behind Liverpool, having the worst possible season they could have. 5 points ahead, rather. So, yeah, I would look at next season and I have big question marks over United. Like, put it this way, they spent all that money on that defence. Liverpool had championship-level players at centre-back for the run-in, and Liverpool ended up with a better defensive record than them.
Wow.
That's not ideal. And
yeah, it's not great.
The other big question is, who's the goalkeeper?
Henderson. It just needs to be.
I agree, but they don't seem to know yet.
Well, my assumption was that that's why they brought in Heaton. Was now Heaton's the two, Henderson's the one, and you find a place for De Gea. But you got
to
do it.
But is Aston Villa's backup goalkeeper really good enough to be Manchester United's backup goalkeeper?
Well,
that's
a
weird one to me.
Yeah.
And like, you know, from watching NFL, there's this the old saying, if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks.
Yep.
I kind of look at it and think, if you've got two goalkeepers, you don't have a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
We don't yet know if Henderson is Manchester United level, if he's a top four caliber goalkeeper. We know De Gea was, he's not now. We don't know what Henderson is yet because we haven't seen enough of him. I think they've got big question marks, and obviously we'll see what they do in the summer, but their fans are expecting a big window. Traditionally under the Glazers, United don't spend big in when they have Champions League secured.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they get Pau, Torres, and maybe two or three players in the 30 to 40 million pound range, and they don't get Sancho, they don't get Rice, they don't get Grealish, they don't get Kane.
They
I think United fans
though.
Will be in for a tough season.
All of those players are going to go for more money than they should. I really like Pau Torres. I think that would be a really good signing.
So
for
do
them.
I, but the issue, Kev, is he's a left-sided centre-back.
Yeah.
You spent 80 million on Harry Maguire, who's a left-side centre-back. I know he's right-footed, but he didn't play on the right for Leicester. He played on the left.
Yeah.
You bought him based on his attributes in that role, and now you're going to move him. Like, that's just, it's bad management.
Or you aren't moving him. And Maguire and De Gea are both looking for jobs.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at a certain point, do you just admit, like, okay, leadership qualities, I guess, but, like, the on-pitch performance isn't good enough? Because Pau Torres is a better centre-back, for me, anyway. But we'll go from there. I ended up giving them a B. We'll go on to Newcastle now. There was a lot of doom and gloom surrounding Newcastle for long stretches of the summer with the, well, I guess it wasn't actually a summer. It was like September, because of the weird COVID, stuff affecting the lengths and timings of seasons. But, when it seemed like they were going to get that buyout finally, didn't end up happening. Season starts. We still have Mike Ashley. We still have Steve Bruce. Everything's going to be terrible. We're going down. I think Jake had them going down, and he's a Newcastle fan. A lot of other people, I'm sure, had them in their preseason predictions going down. And then they finished 12th, which is much higher than that. Like we mentioned, there was like a passing ships moment in like February, maybe it was February or March, when I think it was February, when Fulham were on the way up, Newcastle were on the way down. That was going to be how the season ended. Super didn't happen. They got Callum Wilson back. I think they got Callum Wilson and Alan Saint-Maximin back the same week. And then they got Almiron back the weekend before that. And then just things entirely changed. Pretty good end to the season. Pretty decent results. Some scalps that they got that were probably above what any Newcastle fan would have even hoped. However, that probably doesn't change the long-term perspective of fans at the club who probably still want Ashley gone, still want Bruce gone. But their season was fine. Like, you can't use this season to tar and feather those two. Like, things worked out. Things could have broken badly. But if you had had Callum Wilson and Alan Saint-Maximin fit for the whole season, you're probably in the top 10, not potentially battling relegation. And like I said, they ended up 12th, which wasn't anywhere close. 13th in goals allowed, so maybe they landed exactly where they were supposed to land, but If they had been more fit for more of the season, that team has plenty of talent and attack, and they set up defensively. They only really need four people attacking at any given time. Alan Saint-Maximin is just electric. Callum Wilson will score goals when he has the chances to score goals. Joe Ellington even played a fairly important role for them. It's pretty clear Almiron isn't ever going to be what people expected when he left Atlanta United, and everybody was wondering if this was going to be like the start of a pipeline between the MLS and the Premier League. No. It turns out to be the answer there. But yeah, you throw Ryan Fraser into that mix. Obviously, he didn't have an incredible season, but you got him, you got Matt Ritchie. It is a team that will often finish between 8th and 12th, and that's what they did this year, just at the lower end of that range. And like I said, most people expected they'd just get relegated. I almost forgot about Joe Willock, who only came in January and then managed to score 8 goals in their last 9 matches. Didn't he win Player of the Month, too, after doing all that?
Yeah, like, I think didn't he win Player of the Month for April or May?
Yeah, it was either April or May.
He was exceptionally good.
He was fantastic. But you know what they shouldn't do? Pay the money Arsenal are expecting them to pay to sign him. Like that.
You know what Arsenal shouldn't do?
Sell him. Like, period. Like,
you've been crying out for goals from midfield all year.
Yeah.
And one of your players is off rampaging through the league.
Yeah.
Under Steve Bruce.
And it's incredible with, like, the late runs he was making, how good he is with his head, which just, like, isn't a requirement for the position he plays, but just, like, ooh, fun bonus. He was fantastic. I'm assuming they're going to do some nonsense and try to sell him for, like, $30 million, the same way they did Iwobi. I don't think Newcastle should try to buy him. And to your point, Arsenal shouldn't try to sell him. So, but just distilled into the period that he was there, that is one of the best stretches that anybody's ever had. That's one of the best January loan signings that I've ever seen personally. I'm sure there are years before me where somebody pulled off some kind of magic. But, man, the attitude shift as soon as Joe Willock was regularly playing. He wasn't even starting, by the way. For the most part, he was coming on from a sub and saving them in every match in the last 10 matches. But anyway, on the whole, they were fine.
And doing that.
You what? What'd you say?
Yeah, like, he was coming off the bench and performing like that. That was very, very impressive. No, he did start a bunch of the games. But, you know, like you said, it's unusual for a January loan signing to have that type of effect. And this season, we had two of them have that type of effect. So, like you said, Newcastle, lots of doom and gloom. But overall, I think they had a decent window last summer.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone could really complain too much about the players they brought in. The issue might have been they left it quite late, or they maybe didn't do enough. But
they were a centre-back short. They sold Lejeune, and then, of course, Char got injured, because he always does.
Because he always does. I had Newcastle predicted to finish 14th.
Oh, not bad.
Which wasn't bad. Now, look, don't give me too much credit. I predicted West Ham to go down. but, you know, such is life. The football is a little bit difficult on the eye. Bruce's style of football isn't particularly good. And the run of form between the 16th of December and the 4th of April, where they won only 2 games, was tough to take.
Mm.
But they found form at the right time, and from mid-February on, they did improve. Draws with Wolves, West Brom, Villa, defeat to Brighton away, draw with Spurs, beat Burnley, beat West Ham, surprisingly, drew at Liverpool, lost to Arsenal, beat Leicester, thumped Leicester, should have beat them 5 or 6. Lost to City, everybody expected them to lose that, and then beat Sheffield United, beat Fulham at the end of the year. All things considered, 12th is probably maybe about fair, maybe a touch high. Like you said, what, 13th in goals scored, 13th in goals conceded. So in and around the ballpark. I wouldn't give Bruce too much credit. I think it is a talented squad. You listed out some of the attackers there, and they'd grace a lot of teams. I'd give them a C, maybe a C+, because they finished 12th rather than, you know, the Hodgie 14th. I'll go C+, but there's still problems at Newcastle off the pitch. The manager isn't popular. The owner is less popular, but of course, for the owner, he wants a Steve Bruce who can be a punching bag and he can hide behind. Like, the last thing he wants is a Rafa who's popular, because that'll just put more hate on him. Newcastle fans are still holding out hope for a takeover. And I think neutrals should as well, because Newcastle are a good club and they've got great fans. And it'd be nice to see them not have to go through this charade every year where, you know, there's promises made and promises not kept.
Yeah, I totally agree. And going from them, who people thought might finish 20th, to Sheffield United, who I'm sure very few people thought would actually wind up going down without a fight as they did. What did you make of their season?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So it was bad. Let's move on.
It was an atrocity. Like, let's not beat around the bush. To go 17 games taking only 2 points is a disgrace. 2 points from 51 is a disgrace. They did improve and they went on to win 7 of their last 21 games, which, you know, if they'd had that form early in the season, maybe they'd have survived. They had a spell after the manager, after Chris Wilder left, though, where they did look like they gave up a little bit before starting to find a bit of form again at the end of the season, won 3 of the last 6. The transfer window last summer did not go well. Ramsdale, they overpaid for. We were both skeptical about that deal, but there looked to be logic behind it. They've got a great development goalkeeping staff there. They've done wonders with Dean Henderson. Ramsdale had come through their academy, so they knew him. They knew what kind of personality he was. But they paid $18 million for a guy that was the worst keeper in the league the previous season. That's the be-all and end-all of
two clubs down in consecutive years, which is thoroughly unsurprising to me.
Max Lowe and Jaden Bogle were good signings for the long term, but neither got much of an opportunity this year. Ollie Burke was a weird signing. It was a gamble. It didn't work. Ree and Brewster, they spent big money on, and it didn't work, and they kind of gave up on him very early, and he didn't get a goal or an assist all season. He wasn't getting games towards the end of the year. Young Jebison appeared out of nowhere and all of a sudden he was starting. Massive question marks over Brewster. They've obviously brought in Jokanović, who's a promotion expert, brought up Watford and Fulham, so he knows what he's doing in the Championship. He'll take over the bones of a good squad. Like, this is still the squad that finished 9th. Like, let's not pretend it's a squad full of trash. It's a squad that finished 9th, bar Henderson. Ramsdale, I think there's a decent goalkeeper in there. He's just not there yet. It'll take a bit of time. But playing in a good team in the Championship might boost his confidence as opposed to playing in a bad team in the Premier League, even though it's the same team. Brewster the same way. He'll be in a good team in the Championship as opposed to that bad team in the Premier League. So maybe that's something you can, a reclamation project. The only one I'd imagine they'll lose for sure is Sander Berge. I don't think he's going to the Championship. But other than that, it's hard to see anybody else leaving. They'll lose Ampadu because he was in on loan. But I think everybody else could well stay.
I think they had an option to buy, but I doubt it would happen in the Championship.
No, but maybe Chelsea'd be willing to loan him out again to get him more experience. Yeah. The hope I would have for them is that they don't stupidly sell Ismaïla Koulibaly, who they loaned out last summer to Burshot, who's their sister club. He had a brilliant season. Apparently, they've already had some offers for him. If they're losing Berge, you've got to bring him in to replace him. Ideally, you'd just do what Norwich did last summer and just be ignorant and say, no, we're not selling.
Yeah,
we're keeping Berge, we're keeping him. They're the foundation of our midfield for next year. We're going to have Jebison and Brewster up front. We've got O'Connell coming back. We've got Egan. We've got Basham. He probably needs to be replaced. maybe you could keep Ampadu to replace him. We've got Bogle, we've got Lowe. We need one or two more pieces. We're going to be good to go. We're keeping what we have. If they did that, they'd have a good old shot at coming back up. It is a... Like, this season didn't do them justice at all.
Yeah.
But it's an F minus, and it's, if there was a lower grade to give them, that's what you'd give them, because I mean, they were just a bit of a shambles. Yeah. And I think the only thing they can take is that they broke the record for the most defeats in a season. They had the worst start to a Premier League season, and it can't get any worse.
Yeah,
that's all I'd say. It can't get worse.
And in theory, it'll be one of the best squads in the championship day one. Like, we've seen what Rion Brewster can do there. Like you mentioned, O'Connell missed the entire season, which I think damaged them far more than anyone would have expected. But yeah, they should be fine. Moving on to Southampton next. I wound up giving them a D. They finished 15th. They were 19th in goals allowed. Like, that is not good. You mentioned earlier them being down there, and I'm sure that'll catch some people by surprise. last transfer window, we gave them a C- in the summer. And the question was largely, have they actually improved their squad? And our thought at the time was basically that they hadn't. And that definitely bore out. They finished with 9 fewer points than they had in 1920. The high point was very clearly the Liverpool win, based on the reaction that Hasenhüttl had. And then basically everything went down in a fire trash after that. Ings and Ward-Prowse were pretty terrific. Che Adams, I thought, finally took a step forward. 9 goals, 14 goal contributions is more than they were getting from him before. And, you know, you take the good with the bad with Ings. You know he's going to, you know, have random 1 to 2 week injuries, and knowing that Che Adams can at least keep the goals flowing without him, I think is an important thing for them to know. I think I still believe in Hasenhüttl. It's weird, the long stretches of terribleness they go through. Didn't really settle on a goalkeeper. The back four wasn't very convincing. I don't know how much of that is a him thing versus a squad thing. But on the whole, you're sticking with him another year for sure. If anything, I think you're lucky, because if he'd had another good season, he'd probably be gone.
If he'd had a good season, he'd probably be a front runner for the Spurs job.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. And if you told me that last year, I would not have hated it. The squad definitely needs improvement, either from development within, because they do have a fairly young squad, or bringing in transfers. If they don't, they could be a sneaky relegation candidate next season.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you look at the lack of depth. They had one right back in Kyle Walker-Peters and one left back in Ryan Bertrand, and no backups because they loaned Jan Valeri out to Birmingham.
And one's gone now.
And Bertrand is gone now. And he was injured for a bunch of the end of the season, and they had to play a centre-back there. Vestergaard fooled people early in the season into thinking he was some sort of great defender. Yeah. And the hope will be that somebody stopped watching them around Christmas time and gives them a bunch of money for him and they can rebuild. They need a lot this summer. They need a goalkeeper. They need a new left back, a backup right back, although they could just bring Valeri back. They need an extra body in midfield. They own 3 central midfielders. They own 4. One is Lamina, who they have no interest in. But he does have a year left on his contract. So it's probably worth...
And he was decent enough last year. Try to work him back in.
So give him a chance. You've got him, you've got Romeo, you've got Diallo, you've got Ward-Prowse. That's a good group. Get one more ball player in who you can make sure James Ward-Prowse doesn't have to play every minute of every game again before you break him. They need one in there. They probably need another striker. The big question mark is what's going to happen with Ings. He's got a year left in his contract. He hasn't really shown any inclination to sign a new deal. If he's not willing to stay, you're going to have to sell him this summer, because Southampton can't afford to lose him for free. Like you said, Adams took a big step forward from after lockdown last season. He actually started scoring goals. He hadn't scored up until that point, but the patience they showed him paid off. And like you said, 14 goal contributions this season is impressive. Good players in between the lines, and Armstrong, Gennepo. I thought Minamino had moments where he looked really, really well suited to them. Don't know if they'll have the interest in keeping him, but it's possible.
I also don't think he's going to make it to Liverpool.
No, he's not making it to Liverpool. He's not a Liverpool player. He will be sold this summer or loaned out again, but he won't be at Liverpool next year. They have a big summer on. They need quite a bit. There's questions over the ownership. They're Chinese owned, and a lot of the Chinese ownership around Europe are either selling up or really tightening the purse strings because their government is telling them to do so and bring their money home.
Happened with Suning at Inter, in case people are wondering what's going on.
Yeah,
there.
And Wolves are for sale as well. So they're Chinese owned too. That's, you know, there's West Brom, they're Chinese owned, so keep an eye on them too. It's a big, big summer for Southampton, but yeah, right now, it's hard to look at them and think they won't be in the relegation mix next season because they need so much. They were top. They won on a Friday night this season and were top.
Wow, I didn't even remember that.
You know, like, that's the kind of season that they had. You look at, they beat Liverpool, and that was obviously a great result for them. They were very, very excited by the result, and rightly so. And they were sixth when they won that game. And then they didn't win a game. They lost six in a row, drew one, lost two more, won one, lost two more, won one, lost two more. Like, they were just atrocious from when they beat Liverpool onwards. Really, really poor. Only four wins after that Liverpool win. So, yeah, they had 3 weeks in the top four. They finished three weekends in the top four this year.
Crazy.
And they finished 15th. And we're only going in one direction. Like, if the season had been another 10 games, they weren't going to go to ninth. They were going to go to 19th. It's a D. It is a D, unfortunately. And unfortunately for Ralph, that bad second half has probably cost him a job, because I do think, if not Spurs, Everton would have been in for him.
Yeah. Yeah, his profile was riding nice and high last summer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now it's up to him to either recover it or, you know, maybe he overperformed it. We misestimated him, because basically the second he was signed, you, me, Sam, who comes on to talk with us about Southampton sometimes, we were all like, that's a fantastic signing. And then it bore out pretty immediately. But, yeah, it's going to be a big year for him and Southampton at large. All right, so buckle up. I don't think we have that much time left to record, so I'll try to get through Tottenham in less than 20 minutes. It was not a great season. I don't know if you knew that, Dave. It wasn't ideal. Wow. Man, talking about Tottenham, huh? Okay, so before the transfer window, which, again, was very truncated because the gap between seasons was so short last year, I don't think there were many Tottenham fans that expected much more than top six and a deep cup run. We did not feel very confident about where we were off the back of Pochettino being sacked in Jose's half season, where we had chances twice to overtake Chelsea by playing them directly and beating them, lost both of those. Ended up slipping down to 6th or 7th. I don't even remember. But it ended up being good enough for a Europa League play-in place, which led to us playing over 55 matches this year. Fun. Then, at the end of that transfer window, we signed Bale and Reguilon from Real Madrid. Although, obviously, that's not where Reguilon had just won the Europa League. At that moment, the expectation shifted. From we'd be fine with top six and a deep cup run to we have to get top four and a trophy. And the bad news is we basically did the former. Seventh, and obviously made it to the Carabao Cup final. And that just wasn't good enough. Not only were the performances not good enough, the manager wasn't good enough, the interactions with everyone wasn't good enough. It was very, very bad. But that happened later, because as you mentioned, at match week 14, Liverpool were leading the league and were in first. After match week 13, it was Tottenham, before we played you, where Bergwijn missed two really easy chances that could have changed that match. And then Firmino gets the late header to kind of jumpstart you guys. And then for us, very much less so. Mourinho's tactics were working at that time. We were basically only attacking with three players, Bergwijn, Son, and Kane, and then using everyone else to defend, which was needed because we were regularly playing Eric Dier. But yeah, then after that loss to Liverpool in the last minute, something just snapped. I don't know if it's because of the way the loss happened, that it reminded them of the Champions League loss. There was some talk that I think you had a really big stretch of that game where you were really on the front foot. And apparently Mourinho told them that they were like doing great. And everyone was like, what are you talking about? We're just waiting for them to score a goal. And Mourinho was like, no, sit back and defend. And then obviously you got the late winner. And so that might have been the beginning of the breaking between the squad and Mourinho after such a good start to the season. But yeah, then everybody's player, all the players' heads dropped. Mourinho started slating him in the press. He did it so much that Levy himself had to tell Mourinho to stop insulting our players in the press. And then after the next match, he insulted the players in the press again. So that's probably when we started looking at sacking him. Because you can't do that, much like the Chris Wilder thing at Sheffield United. You know, as soon as you're disobeying or insulting your boss in any field, you're probably not long for that job. But yeah, then everything just crumbled. We sacked him, brought in Mason as our interim manager. And to be fair, I think his team selection was not particularly great. He won 4 of his 6 Premier League matches. That is not bad. The downside is shifting those, lost us the Carabao Cup. Although apparently one of the reasons why we sacked Jose when we did was Levy was worried that if Jose had been that crap and everyone hated him at the club, and then he won the Carabao Cup, the fans wouldn't have been okay with getting rid of him. I don't think that's true. I think everyone would have been just fine thanking him for the one piece of silverware and then bidding him adieu. But that was the perception anyway. So if anybody was wondering why we sacked Mourinho the week of a title, it wasn't that we were worried we'd lose it. It was worried that we would win it and what that would mean long term for Mourinho and the future of the club, considering how much damage he was doing internally. Yeah, so Mason comes in, like I said, wins 4 of his 6, has 2 of the hardest press conferences any manager will ever have. The first one is he gets hired the day before the ESL news breaks. So his introductory press conference was him having to defend Tottenham and Daniel Levy's choice to join the ESL. And his third ever press conference was about his personal best friend and Tottenham talisman, Harry Kane, doing an interview intimating that he wants to leave. That is not an easy way to start your managerial career. Still got 4 out of the 6. If the Kane stuff didn't happen, we would have won the Villa match. We would have been in the Europa League. Pretty confident in that. But on the whole, I don't blame Mason for that. Also worth noting, Harry Kane didn't actually say he wants to leave. He sure looked like he wants to leave. And like we talked about earlier, sure looked like he was saying goodbye to everybody. But really what he was asking for was for the club to match his ambition. And out of the blue, Daniel Levy was gifted the opportunity to sign one of the best managers in the game. You could argue the best. I probably wouldn't. You could have that argument if you wanted to. But Antonio Conte was released by Inter from his contract because he had just won them the Scudetto. And he was like, I need to keep my players and buy new players. And they're like, sounds great. Here's what's going to happen. We're going to sell your players and there's no money for new players. So Conte gets released into the wild. Brief rumors with the Madrid job, but then that ends up going to Ancelotti. Now Tottenham are the biggest club that needs a manager. And Antonio Conte is a very big manager that needs a club. We still have Harry Kane. You got Son. You still got Toby. You still got Hugo. There's pieces there. Pieces that have to win now. But there are pieces there. You actually look at the squad itself. It actually weirdly lines up with Conte's tactics, where you could have used Ben Davis as a left-sided center back, or Joe Roden, who's right-footed but comfortable on the left. Suddenly, you know, Doherty looks less like the worst signing in the history of all time, because now he can play as a right wing back. You have Son as the Lautaro, the Kane as the Lukaku, Højbjerg is a Brozovic-ish role. Bergwijn would actually probably be really good as a left midfielder with some defensive responsibilities.
Or as a wing back?
Yeah, like or just Moses? Traditionally shift him, yeah. Like, it weirdly would have worked out really well. Also, if you don't want to play Steven Bergwijn on the left as a wingback or a left midfielder, you know who would be incredible if he didn't have to worry about defending? Sergio Reguilón, who is fantastic. Had a terrible back half of the season.
And you know who would be a really good backup for him?
Ryan Sessegnon?
Ryan Sessegnon.
Yeah.
Your squad is ideal for Conte.
Yeah.
You want a Barella-type box-to-box midfielder?
Yeah, because it's not Toby.
There's Tanguy Ndombele.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, there's Giovanni Lo Celso, who could play the Eriksen role.
Yep, as could Dele Alli.
Toby in the middle of a back three, that extends his career.
Yep.
You probably need... Ideally, you'd want to buy 2 flanking centre-backs and a new goalkeeper. I'll be honest with you.
If there was literally no money, Davinson Sanchez on the right side of a three where his mistakes of not being able to track anyone, Toby could cover him. Add that mobility over there.
And Ben Davies on the left.
Exactly. Or Roden or Tanganga. Like, all of a sudden, you're like, the squad kind of makes sense if you're looking at it through the Conte lens. But then, all of a sudden, both Conte realized who Levy was, and Levy realized who Conte was, and this is like a week into negotiations, which is just what is, it's what's so, so absurd. Of course we had to try for Conte, of course. And I'm not shocked that we missed out on him. What I'm shocked by is how late in the hour it got before Conte realized that Levy just wasn't going to spend all the money that he wanted. And Levy realizing that Conte maybe wouldn't work with the young players as well. Like, neither of those things are surprises. How did that come up in day six of negotiating? I really, really don't understand. So for anybody that doesn't know, the main points that ended up causing the whole Levy-Conte thing to not work, even though we're hiring Paratici, who is fine as a director of football, but I would have loved it with Conte. The two of them would have worked well together. Don't love it by himself. The issues that were had were amount of spots on the coaching staff. I don't know if I've mentioned this before. Antonio Conte just won the Scudetto, beating Juve for like the first time in forever amount of years. He had seven staff members, and he wanted to bring his seven staff members that just won that Scudetto, and Daniel Levy was like, you get four. And he was like, I want to bring these people. Now, it's worth noting, Daniel Levy has had to pay off two consecutive coaching staffs in 18 months. Poch's, Mourinho's. So he didn't want to have a big squad, a big coaching squad coming in. Also, he really wanted Ledley King and Ryan Mason to be part of the senior staff. That's a weird demand. Maybe somebody finds a way. Maybe Levy lets him have one more. Conte's willing to sacrifice one more. You work that out. Apparently not. Personal wages was about $3 million off, reportedly. More importantly, he wanted transfer funds that he needed to transform the squad into being genuine contenders right now. It's worth noting, as you mentioned earlier, this is exactly what he did at Chelsea. He came into a talented squad, cleaned up the Mourinho mess, and won them a title that year.
Yeah.
That's all Conte wanted. I think he added 10 players that first summer at Chelsea. It isn't cheap. Hiring Conte is not cheap because of his wages, because of his ability as a manager. It's also not cheap because he demands players that know how to play his system or that he can convert, like we were just talking about earlier. But he's basically like, I need the money to buy players that will be able to allow us to make that kind of leap. And I need to know that we're either not selling Harry Kane, or if we are selling Harry Kane, that those funds are going back into the transfer funds. Now, Dave, you and I were WhatsApping about this on like Tuesday or Wednesday. Mm. And I was like, I'm not confident that the Kane money would go back into transfers. And you were like, it has to. It's Antonio Conte. And it turns out we were both right. Levy wasn't confident enough to say you'll get every last dime of the Kane money to be able to spend on your own players. Allegedly, he did tell him that we were willing to just hold Kane. 3 years left on his contract, that's fine. But then there's not money for all those new players. Yeah. It was kind of a rock and a hard place. And like I said, if you zoom out, none of this is surprising. Conte demands money, he demands perfection, he demands to be contending immediately. And Daniel Levy is stingy with the club's money. He tries to run it so that it's profitable because we, in theory, have an owner named Joe Louis, but we really don't. Joe Louis owns a company that owns Enoch that Levy is the chairman of that runs Tottenham Hotspur. Like, it is not an A to B thing. And so somehow, a week into negotiations, Conte realizes that we don't have a lot of money, and that's why he just left the club he left. So it's baffling. The demands that Levy had were absurd. Like I said, I think on the sixth or seventh day of negotiations, they just both went full mask off, and all these things that should have been, you know, fungible, they should have been able to be negotiated around. Levy was like, I can't promise you that you need to have money. And Conte was like, but I need money. He was like, I thought you wanted to win. And Levy was like, I do, but not by spending money. That sounds awful. So it's really just embarrassing that this has gone through. As I'm sure you know, Dave, and a lot of people that follow me on Twitter, I was driving the Conte train the second he was released by Inter. Because you don't just luck into that kind of manager being available to you while there are no other big clubs available to him.
As soon as it was announced that he left Inter, I tweeted, in my opinion, he should be the next Spurs manager.
Yep. And he should have been.
And he should have been. Like, if you have an opportunity to get Conte, you get Conte. I don't care if he wants to bring 17 staff. If he wants to put his family in positions at the club, you do it. If he wants an extra 3 million a year, you give it to him. If he wants some funds, you give it to him. But you look at the squad, right? Lloris is a good goalkeeper, no longer a great goalkeeper, but he's a serviceable goalkeeper. He had Handanovic at Inter, similar level, right? Joe Hart's not great, but he is what he is. And Alfie Whiteman's a talented young goalkeeper. Goalkeeper, you could say, boxed off for this season, fine. Back three, I think Tanganga's really good. I think Tanganga,
but he's a centre back, and Mourinho thought he was a right back for who the hell knows why.
But if you play Tanganga on the right of a three, Toby in the middle, and buy a left-footed centre back, like I've pushed for 2 years, Abdou Diallo of PSG is desperate to get out of there. Then you've got Roden. You'd have Davinson, Roden, and Davies as backups, right? That leaves you with Eric Dier to sell anywhere. Get anything you can. If you get 15 million for him, take it. You could play Doherty and Bergwijn as your right wing backs. That means you can sell Aurier, okay? You've got Reguilon and Sessegnon as your left wing backs. Perfect. You've got Højbjerg and Winks as your Brozovic deep lying playmaking.
I think Winks would have genuinely seen a renaissance under Conte.
So do I. But then you've got, say, for your more creative role in midfield, the more creative box to box, you've got Ndombele and Lascelles, so they can both play that role. You'd probably need a powerful box to box, more defensive kind of presser, like the way he used to use Vidal, the way he used,
and that's Nangland not Sissoko. That would have Sissoko, to be an outside
Sissoko
player.
But Sissoko could be the backup. But that leaves you with Eric Lamella that you can sell. Okay, so you'd still get a decent fee. You might get again 12.
Somebody in Italy will pay over 15 or 20 million for him.
Of course they will. And you can also then sell Dele Alli, who doesn't fit in a Conte team. But there's a midfielder at City called Yanhel Herrera, who's been at Granada the last 2 years, who would be perfect. And I don't think City would want massive money for him. Maybe 15, 20 million, similar to what they got for Douglas Luiz. But you get him, you get him for not a whole lot much more than you'd sell Lamella for. But that you've still got Dele Alli to sell, Aurier and Eric Dier. You can sell all three of those. You've got Kane and Son up front. You've got Moura as, say, a backup to Son. You need a backup to Kane. You'd have plenty of money to do it. The Spurs squad is really strong. You need, like I said, a left-footed centre-back, one in midfield, and a backup striker. That's three players. It's not the perfect
And that's what
squad.
Kane said, is we were 2 to 3 players away. And if you have Conte and you get those 2 to 3 players, I'm not saying we win the title, but we're seriously contending.
You get top four, easy. And as I said, you've got those players to sell who could fund those moves. Those players could fund those moves. Aurier still has a lot of clubs that like him in Europe. There'll be Premier League clubs that like Dier. You'll get 12 to 15 for Lamella. And you will get a club that will take a gamble on the talent of Dele Alli. Yeah. You could get an Everton who would go, you know what? 25, 30 million. We'll take a chance on him. We think we can get the best out of him. Somebody might give you the money. Of course they might. And remember, Dele 3 years ago was a £100 million player. Yep. So the talent is there. He just doesn't fit Conte. But if you could sell those four players and then fill your three needs, the only real weakness you might have is you could say, okay, right wing back's not brilliant. Doherty's good, not great. Bergwijn, we'll wait and see. But at least it's a use of him. And you'd be a little bit unsure about the goalkeeper. But you can fix that in a year. But if you get top four, you'll have the money to fix it. But the bones of everything at Spurs is good. For me, Kev, the season is a D. Because a D for disaster. Because I said at the start of the season, when you closed your transfer window with the players you did, if they don't get top four with this squad, with this manager, it's a disaster.
And it was
a disaster. And he got sacked. And you lost the cup final.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I'm giving Spurs an F. because of what they've just done. You had an opportunity to hire one of the four best managers in the world. Klopp, Guardiola, Simeone, Conte. If you can get one of those four,
you just do it.
You do it no matter what it takes.
Yeah.
I understand that Levy was probably looking at the Chelsea situation when they had Conte and the massive payoff they had to pay to his staff when they left.
Yep.
I don't care.
Nope.
I don't care. You have an obligation to that football club to put that football club in the best possible situation you can to win.
And your best player just came out to try to bully you into showing ambition. And you didn't even have to show ambition. You lucked into what would have been something that showed ambition.
You'll never get an opportunity again.
No.
You'll have burnt your bridges with him. You're not going to get Klopp. You're not going to get Pep. And it's unlikely Simeone will ever come to England.
Yep. So now you're just waiting for somebody that might grow into eventually being that. Like we did with Poch, who is gone. So
yeah. And even with the development of Poch, he's still a tier or two below those.
Hmm. I'd say one. You know? You'd probably say two. But yeah.
I'd say two. He hasn't had any success.
Yeah. Won the two lighter cups in France. But.
And then those four have had sustained success over long periods.
Conte's won five league titles in 7 years.
What? And he got promoted in Serie B as well.
Yep.
Simeone, two league titles, two Europa Leagues, two Champions League finals with Atletico Madrid. By far, like, gulfs behind Real Madrid and Barca in terms of finances.
Yeah.
Klopp, what he did at Dortmund and Liverpool, and Pep, what he's done at Barca, Bayern, and now City.
Yeah.
Like, that's the level. Conte's in that group. He may be the best of them.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
At worst, he's the fourth best manager in the world, and you blew it.
Yeah.
And now you're getting Paratici, who's good, not great. With Conte, it would have been great.
Exactly.
Without Conte,
it's question mark. Yeah.
Especially like if we end up years at Juve.
Especially if we end up chasing somebody like Galtier, who the idea was we were trying to get Galtier and Campos together, but Galtier was already going to Nice, Campos was going to Real Madrid, and neither of those things have happened yet.
No, but Campos is going to Nice with him.
Oh, is he now?
That's the latest, is that Nice have decided they want the two of them.
Why on earth is that
owned by Britain's richest man?
Yeah.
Jim Ratcliffe, I think is his name.
Mm.
Who is Nice's? I think it's Jim Ratcliffe is his name. But he's Britain's richest... Yeah, Jim Ratcliffe, Britain's richest man, worth about $18 billion. Mm. And now he's putting together the team, the dream team that just beat PSG to the title. With Poch, by the way. Campos has built the only two teams who've beaten PSG the
Monaco,
title.
Monaco
and now this, on small budgets.
Yeah.
Campos and Conte was the dream.
Yeah,
Campos left. You should have been appointing him in January.
He should have been there when Mourinho was there because they wanted to work together again. Anyway, we're talking about Tottenham for a very long time. I ended up giving them a D, not an F, although with the Conte stuff, maybe it should have been an F. The reason I didn't give it a full F is we still managed to get European football, technically, throw an asterisk on there, beat out Arsenal on the final day despite their very good late push. And we got to see Kane and Bale assist each other, like, a lot. Mm. And that's just fun. Like, the fact that Mourinho and Levy were so incompetent that we had a season of Bale and Kane together and we didn't see it until Ryan Mason was our manager is absurd. But anyway, there were a few bright moments this season that was enough. The City win, the brief hope that we might actually win something. Like I said, all the Kane and Bale moments, they were great moments. The whole season crumbled to ash in our hands, as now has our managerial appointment. But that doesn't remove those memories. It just kind of makes them the rare bright spots. And it was a very dark season.
Let's move on before you get too upset about this.
Oh, Dave, just a quick second, just because you breathed there. If we're not putting this out till Thursday, we have a little extra time if you need to go now.
No, look, we'll knock these three out because these are three boring ones. We'll knock these three out pretty quick.
Okay.
West Brom's an F. Right, let's jump on then to West Brom. Relegated, Bilic sacked mid-season, Big Sam comes in to save the day, doesn't get close to saving the day. A decent run. After losing to Spurs, they went on a decent run where they only lost 3 of 10, but then they lost their last 4. Pereira, the one real bright spot.
He's
someone
so
in the Premier
good.
League, someone's paying a lot of money for him.
If you're Norwich, do you get him to replace Buendia?
I don't know if he'd go there. Are they big enough for him?
I don't know. That's a good point.
And I think he'd cost more. I think they'll hold on to him as much as they can. They'll want the same kind of money for him. I think it's an F because they got relegated. But I will say the players they brought in January, Maitland-Niles is good. He should have been an Arsenal. Gallagher's a good player. I know he came last summer, but those two are talented. Yakuzlu was talented. He came in January in midfield.
Yeah, he looked
to
really
lose
good.
All of them and now have to rebuild your midfield and replace Pereira. It's a big task facing whoever it is. It's been rumored that Chris Wilder could be the favorite to go there. But it's a big task. It's a shame to see them go down. I like West Brom. I'd like to see them stay up. And obviously, for Dan, it'd be nice to see them do quite well as well. But
imagine being up in the Premier League again, and you weren't able to go that one year, and now you're back down.
You're back down. Ugh. And you're probably going to lose Sam Johnston as well, because I'd imagine he'll get a Premier League move, even though I don't think he's up to much.
Yeah, we're sniffing, even though we don't have a manager.
76 goals conceded last year. Don't sniff too hard.
I would not.
I think it's an F for me.
Yeah, I don't know how it can be anything other than an F. Like you said, there were bright moments. That early draw with Chelsea should have been a win, but it ended up being a draw. Like you mentioned, Pereira was just fantastic for them this season. The defense was just never good enough. And like you said, they brought in Big Sam. Too late, by the way. If you brought him in a month earlier, there would have been enough matches for them to squeak it. But how many points did they end up short? More than 9, because that was down to Fulham.
Quite a few.
Yeah. I don't know if they
ended up 13 points off Burnley.
Nah, that
wouldn't
happen.
The problem was when Sam took over, they went in a really bad run.
Yeah,
like they had a horrible run when Sam took over. They kind of gave up in a bunch of games: Leeds, Arsenal, Villa. It was a really bad start for them. They didn't really get their act together until mid February, and Sam had taken over in sort of mid-December after the City game. So there was two lost months there, and that's what really cost them, unfortunately.
Yeah, but there's really not that much more to say. Like you said, their ownership group wasn't even present in England for most of the season or the second half of last season after all the COVID stuff started. Now they might have to sell on. That club's about to be in a lot of transition. And I know we said it last year, about Bournemouth, who then actually did fairly well and then had a chance in the playoffs. But I do not have much faith in this squad having a chance to bounce back next year.
No, I feel the same. Yeah. I feel the same.
All right, on to West Ham, who had a very good season. Just full disclosure, I gave them an F in our summer transfer show. You had them being relegated, so near misses for both of us. But, if you look at it objectively, they signed two players from Slavia Praha. They signed a defender who had been washed for about 4 years since he left West Brom, and a promising but in much need of development, Saeed Benrahma, from the Championship. That was not a winning group for me, especially under David Moyes. And it certainly looked to be true for the first month of the season. Didn't they? I think they didn't win any of their first four matches. And we were like, how long are they going to continue to give Moyes a chance on the second asking of bringing him back? Sometimes you're just crazy wrong. And I certainly was. What I didn't anticipate was they stopped looking at players in the caliber that they had been looking at. They brought in Seb Haller. Both of us loved that move. They brought in, oh my God, I forgot his name, the midfielder they brought in from...
Felipe Anderson?
No, I think it was Villarreal.
Pablo Fornals?
Yeah, Pablo Fornals. Oh, yeah. So I guess Valencia. They used to chase those players who are the Champions League rejects, kinda, who are Europa League, Champions League quality that can drag us up. But those players kept not being interested in being there. You mentioned Felipe Anderson there. A great example of that. They were bringing players in that wanted to live in London, wanted to be on big wages, and wanted to play. They didn't really care that it was in a claret and blue shirt. They just wanted the money. They wanted the chance. They didn't really get it. And so by bringing in Souček and Soufal, they do get it. They just understand. They understand kind of like the workman-like performances that are required at a club like that while also being talented themselves. All of a sudden, you have Craig Dawson being one of the better defenders in the Premier League, which I still don't understand how that happened. But I just thought the Souček and Soufal signings, I think, are the ones that turned things around. They stopped trying to buy players that were, air quotes, better than them and bought players that would buy in and push them on. And they did that as part of the club they're at under David Moyes. They got it, and they got to work, and they did absolutely fantastically. Suchek obviously scored buckets of goals early in the season that kind of dried up as his role kind of shifted throughout the year. The wingbacks, you had Soufal and Cresswell, who were your number one and number two assisters at the club. And, you know, Mikel Antonio's an interesting player. He's not a true center forward. The fact that those are the two that had your most accurate crosses and your most assists when you don't have, like, an incredible header of the ball, you don't have a traditional number nine, is really, really impressive to me. Also, you mentioned earlier, like, Joe Willock was one of the best January signings we've ever seen. And then next is Jesse Lingard, who scored loads of goals after he joined. I think it was nine after he joined in January. Also dried up a little bit towards the end, which is probably why they slipped as far from the top four as they did kind of at the final hurdle. But, I mean, what they're building there, I think, is really good. And they should do what they can to keep Moyes. Now, if somebody offers them, like, 20 million plus in compensation, like if Everton just decide that they need Moyes back, you probably let him go. But he's building something there, and I think they're doing it in a much more organic way than when they used to try to overbuy themselves to drag themselves up, and then those players just not giving a shit, to be honest with you. But anyway, they're probably going to try to fend off interest in Rice. I personally don't see the Rice thing. I know loads of people do. I'm fine being wrong if I am. If I was them, I might consider selling, getting a replacement there.
If I could
getting a traditional number nine.
For 80 million, I'd sell him, no problem.
Okay, gotcha.
He's not that level of player at all.
No, I think he's in the like 30 to 40, maybe. But anyway, if they're able to keep Moyes, if they're able to keep most of this core together next year, they'll be in European contention again. I think the big thing is if they can bring in a traditional number nine, because that allows Mikel Antonio to fill all of the different gaps that he used to, instead of having to be your number nine because you don't have one. And letting go of Haller, I will never understand unless he just didn't care, which is kind of what I'm accusing him of a little bit here without knowing him at all. But anyway, I think, you know, the Europa League could be difficult. They don't have the most incredible squad depth, but they have the manager. They have the 11. Just see where they go from there. But, you know, I'm probably wrong again because I was this year.
Do you know what's funny is I wrote an article on the EPL Index last summer saying that they needed to build, not rebuild.
Mm.
But because they did so little in the transfer market, I thought they were going to be in trouble. And they made some strange moves. But if they had beaten either Newcastle or Everton in those late season defeats, they would have got top four.
Yeah.
I think Moyes is the manager of the year. I think he did an incredible job. I'm going to give them an A. I know it's unusual to give a team that finished sixth an A, but considering what the expectations were, not just from me and you, but from everybody.
Yeah.
I saw loads of people, including West Ham fans, say that they'd struggle against relegation. In the end, they probably should have got top four. Consistency-wise across the season, there wasn't many better than them. They do have work to do this summer, without question. They probably need a younger goalkeeper. Maybe get another left back in, another one in the middle. Tarkowski, we mentioned in part one, would be good for them.
Mm-hmm.
I would sell Rice because I think if someone's offering you 80 million for Declan Rice, I think you just take it because he's good. He's not great.
And if Chelsea think he's the Conte replacement?
I think that's madness.
Yep.
I think he's much more. He could play with Conte. You put him with Conte, with a player who's going to go and do the destroyer role and let him sit and hold the midfield and be like a bit of a playmaker. That's fine. He's comfortable in that role. The Rice-Suchek pairing was brilliant for them this season. And that shouldn't be taken away from. But I'll give them an A. I think they've got interesting decisions to make this summer. Like you, I think they need to get a number nine in. Patson Dak is the name that's been going around.
I want him so badly because he could play with Kane or replace him long term.
Yeah, he'd be an interesting fit. For them, he's not someone that can play up front on his own. I don't think he's got a good enough
more of an aerial threat. Maybe that's where we sell Valt Weghorst this year.
Possibly, very, very possibly. But yeah, for me, it's an A. And then on to our last team of this review, it is Wolverhampton Wanderers. They finished 13th. They have parted company now with Nuno Espirito Santo after four good years. Three really good years, and then this disappointing season. Very boring to watch for long spells. The injury to Jimenez killed their season. They had no goal scoring threats after that. Their top goal scorers this season, Pedro Neto and Ruben Neves scored 5 each in all competitions. That's not ideal. They had a weird summer transfer window last year where they sold Doherty, bought Semedo, a better player but not as well suited to their team. They spent huge money on Fabio Silva, clearly not ready for the Premier League. I did like bringing in Ait Nouri and Kiana Hoiver. I think they'll be good signings for the long term, assuming they keep Ait Nouri permanently. But, I mean, 13th, defensively very poor, not a whole lot going on in attack. Some bright spots. Neto, I thought, was very good until he hurt his knee. Semedo settled in and started to play well. Adama found a bit of form late in the season. And we did see progression from Fabio Silva through the year. But all things considered, I think it's a very disappointing season for them after, you know, coming up into the league and finishing seventh in back-to-back seasons. I thought they had a real opportunity to push on.
Yeah.
And they failed to. And they went drastically backwards. And unfortunately, with, you know, the situation with their ownership, it's hard to see that there'll be much investment in the squad this year. We don't know. Bruno Laga looks like the favourite to take over as manager. But
I'm sure they'll get some cut price deals on Portuguese players.
Yeah, well, that's part of the problem, is that they've limited themselves in terms of who they buy and what they buy. But all things considered, I do think, unless they have like a fire sale and don't replace players, they'll still be fine next season. They'll be mid-table. Yeah. But this season,
especially if Jimenez is able to play again, which you can't expect of him, but hopefully.
See, that's the thing. What Jimenez do you get back is the big question. Do you get 100%, 90%, or do you get like 50%? Is he going to be hesitant putting his head on?
Or is it Ryan Mason again, that he tries to come back and very quickly realizes that he just can't?
He's been told he's going to have to wear headgear for the rest of his career as well, which isn't ideal. Like even Peter Cech, when he had his head injury, he was incredible before it. He was good afterwards, but he was never the same goalkeeper again. We'll wait and see on Jimenez. We wait and see who the manager is, what their approach is this summer. I think it's a D for Wolves on the 2021 season, and I would hope that they show more next season, because otherwise, where are they going? What are they doing? If it's another season of 13th, I think their big name players will start to lose interest.
Yeah.
Mendes will probably start to lose interest, and he'll stop wanting to put his best players there as well.
Also, to be fair, some of their better players did not cover themselves in glory this year. This is not a case of their big name players being victims. Like Neves and Moutinho did not have the seasons that they had in previous years. Yeah, exactly.
Very poor for his level.
Adama Traore had to play so many minutes up front and try to play as well as he did, because both Neto and Podence both had long-term injuries. Like, and as somebody that had to play Olympiacos when Podence was there, he is a tiny little terror. He is not fun to play against. The striker signings were terrible. I mean, everybody and their mom knew that William Jose wasn't going to be a good signing. And being like, we'll get a player that's old but not good and a player that's talented but not good yet, and they'll work, was a very strange choice.
I think with William Jose, though, like stylistically, he was more similar to Jimenez.
True.
So I think the idea was, if he can replicate some of what Jimenez does,
some percentage, yeah,
he'll get us, you know, some goals. But obviously it didn't really work.
No.
They've got big questions to answer this summer, though. And like their defense needs an overhaul. Cody had a dreadful season.
Yep.
Bolly's not good. It looks like Roman Saiss will leave. Kilman looked good when he came in.
He did.
One of the few bright spots.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that works out. But yeah.
Yeah.
They won't want another season like that.
What do you think about Dendonker now after a couple of years in the Premier League?
I think he's been really poorly used, been totally honest.
Do you think it's as damaging as Dyer? Like has he lost that potential that he once had the way Dyer did?
No, I don't think it's as terminal as the Dyer situation.
Gotcha.
Because I don't think he's been forced out of position as much as Dyer.
Yeah.
Like Dyer just seemed to lose.
He doesn't know how to read the game anymore because he's caught between center back and central midfielder. Yeah.
That's the thing. He doesn't know what position he is anymore. Dendonker still looks like a midfielder. Even when he plays the back, he still looks like a midfielder.
Yeah.
And I think when they play him and Neves together, it does work for them. As long as the wing backs are playing well, the defensive line is holding shape, and they have a focal point in attack. But when they lose the focal point, none of that's there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I gave them a D as well. Also, I think I forgot to mention I did give West Ham an A minus. But that'll do it for all of the clubs. That's all 20. We've gone through all of them, varying lengths depending on how interested we were in them. Sorry. But massive appreciation to you, Dave, for taking the time out as we do a couple times every year to go through all of these clubs and discuss everything they've been doing, the needs that they have, the seasons that they had, and what they can look forward to. If people want to look forward to other stuff from you, where can they go do that?
They can follow me on Twitter at TwoFootedPod. They can find the Two-Footed Podcast every day at 4 p.m. On any podcast provider. Just search EPL Index Podcast, or, like I said, follow me on Twitter, and we tweet it out 10 times a day, so you'll see it there. Other than that, Anfield Index, Anfield Index Pro.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. You can find the show at EPL Roundtable on Twitter or by searching that on any of your podcasting things, but you've probably already managed to do that if you're listening to this and you've listened to over 3 hours, I think it'll wind up being, of us talking about clubs. So anyway, massive appreciation to all of you guys for listening. Incredible appreciation for Dave for taking the time out to talk with us about all of these Premier League clubs. And folks at home, have a great summer, and we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.